First Samuel, chapter 1. Book of First Samuel, chapter 1. Verse 1, we read of a man named Elkanah. And in verse 2, we see that he had two wives. The name of the one was Hannah, and the name of the other, Peninnah. Peninnah had children, but Hannah had no children. And this man, that is Elkanah, went up out of his city yearly to worship and to sacrifice unto the Lord of hosts. We read of his sons, Eli, Hophni, Phinehas, and then we read of the priest of the Lord were there. When the time was that Elkanah offered, he gave to Peninnah his wife and all her sons and daughters portions. But unto Hannah he gave a worthy portion, for he loved Hannah, but the Lord had shut up her womb. And her adversary also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. And as he did so year by year, when she went up to the house of the Lord, so she provoked her, therefore she wept and did not eat. In verse 8, we see that Elkanah asked her a question, asked her two questions, why weepest thou? Three questions, why eatest thou not? Why is thy heart not grieved? Am not I better to thee than 10 sons? So Hannah rose up early, rose up after they had eaten in Shiloh, and after they had drunk. Now Eli the priest sat upon a seat by a post of the temple of the Lord. And she was in bitterness of soul, and prayed unto the Lord, and wept sore. And she bowed a vow, and said, O Lord of hosts, if thou wilt indeed look on the infliction of thine handmaid, and remember me, and not forget thine handmaid, but will give unto thine handmaid a man child, then I will give him unto the Lord all the days of his life, and there shall no razor come upon his head. And it came to pass, as she continued praying before the Lord, that Eli marked her mouth, saw her mouth moving. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart, only her lips moved, but her voice was not heard. Therefore Eli thought she had been drunken. And Eli said unto her, How long wilt thou be drunken? Put away thy wine from thee. And Hannah answered and said, No, my Lord, I am a woman of sorrowful spirit. I have drunk neither wine nor strong drink, but have poured out my soul before the Lord. Count not thine handmaid for a daughter of Belial. Notice the connection there between daughter of Belial and strong drink. For out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto. Then Eli answered and said, Go in peace, and the God of Israel grant thee thy petition that thou hast asked of him. And she said, Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. Reading through verse 28, you see that Hannah, of course, is the central figure of this passage. She's the mother of Israel's first prophet, Samuel. We see here that she's longing for a child. There's much that we learn from Hannah. There's much encouragement in her. There's much help in her. We can find much direction and comfort in this woman named Hannah. And that'll be the subject of the message this evening, the example of Hannah. The example of Hannah. First of all, we need to consider the setting of the text. Consider the time in which she lived. What we just read took place during the time of the judges. Eli is mentioned in our text, and he was a high priest, and he was a judge for approximately 40 years. By reading the book of Judges, we get a picture of the moral climate of the day of Hannah. The book of Judges, of course, records the story of a nation that once knew the works of God, but had turned away from its heritage, turned away from God to reap a very, very grim harvest. And the book of Judges, of course, stands in stark contrast to the book of Joshua. In the book of Joshua, we see an obedient people conquered the Lord through trust in God. But in Judges, we see just the opposite. We see the same people. We see them in disobedience. We see them in idolatry. They were repeatedly oppressed by their enemies. The theme of Judges is one of deterioration with short-lived successes in between that quickly turned into failure of the people. The book of the era of Judges was a time of great instability. It was a time of great depravity. It was a very dark period in Israel's history. And what we just read there in 1 Samuel would have taken place during the time of the judges. In the book of Judges, we have the phrase repeated, they did evil in the sight of the Lord. And we see that repeated throughout the book of Judges. In each of those instances of doing evil, there was always a forsaking of God and a following after other gods. And that's always the order. Where there's a forsaking of God, there will be a replacement. There will be a following after other gods. And we learn this from the book of Judges. It was a time when there was a great lack of restraint. We see in Judges 21 and verse 25 that every man did that which was right in his own eyes. It was a time of great lack of restraint. It was also a time when there was a lack of revelation from the Lord. We read in 1 Samuel 3 and verse 1, there was no open vision. That is, there was no prophecy. There was no preaching. Basically, God was silent during this time. It was a time of disrespect toward the things of God. We read in 1 Samuel 2 and verse 17, for men abhorred the offering of the Lord. For men abhorred the offering of the Lord. So it was a time of great disrespect for the things of God. Overall, it was a time when real religion had grown cold. It was a time when almost everyone had turned their backs upon God. And the situation in the nation was very, very bleak. So that's the time period in which Hannah lived. But we read in our text of some personal circumstances of Hannah. Again, the story of 1 Samuel chapter 1 begins with this man, Elkanah. And he was from the hill country of Ephraim, we see in verse 1, about 2 miles north of Jerusalem. We're told here that he had two wives, which, may I say, was the result of every man did that which was right in his own eyes. One was called Hannah, and the other was called Peninnah. It appears that Hannah would have been the lawful wife of Elkanah, and he would later marry Peninnah because Hannah had no children, or the Lord had shut up her womb. So for this reason, he married this other woman. But Elkanah's plural marriage embittered the life of his home. We see that here in this first chapter. That's not our point, though. His plurality of wives brought unhappiness to each member of the family. We're told in verse 5, though, that he loved Hannah. He loved Hannah.
and he gave her a double portion. But Hannah had a real trial in her life. It was a trial that was sent from God. It is twice mentioned in verse 5 and verse 6. The Lord had shut up her womb. This was a great trial to her. This was a great burden to her. Again, this was a trial sent to her from God. The Lord had shut up her womb. And this caused other problems as well. There was also a trial of opposition. In verse 6, and her adversary, which is Elkanah's other wife, also provoked her sore, for to make her fret, because the Lord had shut up her womb. And we see when Elkanah would go to the house of God yearly, she went too, and we see she provoked her. Therefore she wept and did not eat. So Peninnah was jealous of Hannah because Elkanah loved Hannah. And she became her adversary. Twice it is stated that she provoked her. That is, she irritated her. She insulted her. She annoyed her. And she did this on purpose. We see, and her adversary also provoked her sore, that is, very severely. And then notice what it says, for to make her fret. That is, the reason she did it was to make her fret or to make her miserable. So this was a intentional and deliberate act. It was an intentional and deliberate provoking. And we read in verse 7, she wept and did not eat. Now Hannah, like anyone else, of course, had dreams. Her marriage had not gone the way that she had envisioned. Her family life hadn't either. She had borne no children. And a relationship with her husband's other wife was to the point of being unbearable. This was a great trial. She was continually taunted by Peninnah. Hannah would have been a woman that had many, many heavy afflictions. Again, there was the provoking, there was the cruelty, there was the ridicule, and these were a part of her everyday life. It was a time of great personal difficulty. It was a time of opposition. We read in verse 8 that Hannah wept and that she was grieved. And we read in verse 10 that she was in bitterness of soul. That is, there was pain and agony and grief and unpleasantness in her soul. So here's a woman who has a personal trial from God. The Lord shut up her womb. Here is a woman who lived in a very godless time. Here was a woman who suffered as a result of the times in which she lived. So that's the background of Hannah. And it's very important because we want to observe some personal characteristics of this woman. And as we'll see from her characteristics, she did not use the times in which she lived as an excuse. She did not use her personal suffering as an excuse. But there was a sense in which she rose above these things. She rose above her trial. She rose above her personal sufferings. And really, she went from emptiness to fullness. And what we see in Hannah is how you can go from emptiness to fullness. The Lord shut up her womb. That's emptiness. And we see by the time you get to verse 18, She's no more sad. She's risen above these things. So I want to notice several things. We want to notice seven things about Hannah. First of all, she was, of course, a woman who had a personal relationship with God. The times in which we live, or personal trials, have absolutely nothing to do with determining whether or not you have a relationship with God. And Hannah had a personal relationship with God. As you read through the text, it is obvious that Hannah, in spite of adverse times, in spite of adverse circumstances, here is a woman who experienced a very close association with the Lord. Here is a woman who had personal contact with the Lord. Here is a woman who was familiar with God. Here is a woman who was a friend with the Lord, and the Lord was a friend to her. And this is foundational. A personal relationship with God is foundational to living the Christian life, to having any spirituality at all. Having a relationship with God is absolutely crucial. It's absolutely necessary. This was a relationship in which she realized that God was over all. Notice in verse 11, "And said, O Lord of hosts." She recognized that He was over all. O Lord of hosts. That's one of the things that is necessary to have a relationship with God. You have to realize who He is. You have to realize His position. He is the Lord of hosts. But there's something else that she realized as well here in verse 11. She realized that she belonged to Him. O Lord of hosts, and then we read a little further down, thine handmaid. And she says it three times in verse 11. Thine handmaid. We'll concentrate on that word, thine. What she is recognizing is that she belonged to God. And if you're going to have a relationship with God, you have to realize that He's in control, He's over all, and you belong to Him. You cannot have a relationship with God if you do not realize those things. We see something else about her. She refers to herself as His handmaid, which of course is a subservient position. A subservient position. She took the position of the servant. And if you realize who He is, there's no other position you can take. If you realize that He is the Lord of hosts, what other position can you possibly take? So it begins with recognizing who He is, recognizing that we belong to Him, and then, of course, taking our position before God, which is always to be a subservient position, one of submission. So this is, again, foundational to everything that is said about Hannah. So she had a relationship with God. Secondly, she was a woman of prayer. Here she is, living in a very difficult time, living in a very difficult situation. She's in much distress. She's in much anguish. She is living a life of disappointment. She's living a life of frustration. Nothing seems to go right in her life. She was grieved. She was of sorrowful spirit. She was burdened. She was weighted down. And we read in verse 10 that she prayed unto the Lord. She prayed unto the Lord. That's our second point, but there are several things we want to notice about her praying. She prayed unto the Lord. Point number one concerning her praying is that she moved in the direction of the Lord in her praying. It says there in verse 10 that she prayed unto the Lord. Unto, of course, is a preposition that speaks of direction. in her praying, she moved in the direction of the Lord. And as we've said before, if when you are praying or when I am praying, if we do not move in the direction of God, we're not praying. True prayer will always move you in the direction of God. Praying will not cause you to go further from God. Prayer will not cause you to go in an opposite direction of God. Prayer is unto the Lord. Prayer causes you to move in the direction of God. And that is one way that we can measure our prayers. One way we can judge our prayers. When we are praying, are we moving in the direction of God? She prayed unto the Lord. Now Hannah needed help. She needed strength. She needed comfort. She could feel her own feebleness. She could feel her own helplessness. And she could feel His omnipotence. So the obvious, the thing that makes sense is, turn to Him. And that's what she did. She prayed unto the Lord. And when you feel your need of help, when you feel your need of strength, when you feel your need of comfort, and when you feel your own feebleness and your own helplessness, and when you feel His power, His omnipotence, you have nowhere else to turn but to God. And that's what she did. In verse 12, notice, and it came to pass as she continued praying before the Lord. The word before there speaks of a position. Unto speaks of direction. She's moving in the direction of God. So much so that she's now before the Lord. That is, she is in His presence. And all true praying will bring you before the Lord. It'll bring you into the presence of God. We see the same thing in verse 15. She is again seen before the Lord. So in all of her praying, we must be sure that we're moving in the direction of the Lord. In all our praying, we must be sure that we are in the presence of the Lord. Notice also, she, not only in her praying did she move in the direction of God, but she prayed with great fervency. She had a real desire. She had a burden for the blessing that only God could give. In fact, she was absolutely possessed with this desire and this burden. We read in verse 10 again, and she was in bitterness, that is, pain and agony of soul. She was in bitterness of soul. And it was in that condition, it was in that state that she prayed unto the Lord. She was in bitterness of soul, and she prayed unto the Lord. And as she was praying, she wept. It says that she wept sore in verse 10. That is, there was an urgency in her praying. We read in verse 15, that she poured out her soul before the Lord. That's fervency. This isn't someone who's just speaking words. She poured out her soul unto the Lord. She was praying out of the abundance of what she was feeling within her. Notice verse 16. She says, "For out of the abundance of my complaint and grief have I spoken hitherto." So she's feeling a tremendous burden. And it was out of that burden that she prayed. That's real prayer. And it is that will, again, move you in the direction of God. Now again, it says that she, in verse 15, that she poured out her soul before the Lord. Now, if you pour something, that's not an accident. You spill something, that's an accident. You pour something, that's on purpose. And she poured out her soul unto the Lord. She did so on purpose. She did so deliberately. She poured her soul unto the Lord. Now, consider that she's filled with distress. And what did she do? She poured her distress unto the Lord. Here's a woman in great anguish, and she poured her anguish, she emptied her anguish unto the Lord. She was filled with hurt, and what did she do? She poured her soul unto the Lord. She emptied her anguish unto the Lord. She emptied her hurt unto the Lord. She was filled with sorrow, and she emptied her sorrow unto the Lord. She was filled with burdens, and she emptied her burdens unto the Lord. She was filled with disappointments, and she emptied her disappointments unto the Lord. She was filled with desires. She wanted a child, and she emptied her desires unto the Lord. And you know what happens when you pour these things unto God? You no longer hold unto them, because these things will ruin you. You hold unto the disappointments. You hold unto the sorrows. It'll destroy you. She poured out her soul unto the Lord. That's what praying is. Real prayer is laying out everything before God. Everything that we feel, whether it's a right feeling or a wrong feeling, you lay it all out before God. And this is what she did. She was a woman of prayer. She prayed with great persistence. Notice in verse 12, and it came to pass as she continued praying before the Lord. She continued in His presence. And she continued praying. That is, she kept on praying. She pressed on in praying. She maintained prayer. She sustained prayer. She continued in prayer. Anyone, any lost person can utter some words up to God. But it takes someone with a real desire. It takes someone with a relationship with God to continue in prayer. To continue all night in prayer. That takes a relationship with God. It takes a close relationship with the Lord. So, she did not allow her difficulty and trial and what she was feeling to move her away from God, but toward God, and she continued in that. We also see, going along with her fervency, she prayed with heart and soul. Notice in verse 13. Now Hannah, she spake in her heart. Her lips moved, but words did not come from her mouth. Her voice was not heard. Her lips were moving, but the prayer was coming from her heart. What does that say? That says that her heart was connected to God. In all prayer, there's a connection to the Lord. You can't pray unto God and have a disconnect. There has to be a connection. And it's not just a connection in words, but we see here that her heart was connected to God. True prayer always involves the heart. Again in verse 15, she says, I poured out my soul. I poured out my soul before the Lord. There was an interconnection of heart and soul with God. So here's a woman, in spite of the times in which she lived, in spite of many adverse circumstances, she had a relationship with God, and she prayed. And she prayed. How wonderful it is to have a relationship with God where you can call on Him at any time, where that is the first thought that comes to your mind, I've got to tell the Lord about that. I've got to go and talk to the Lord about that. What a wonderful relationship to have. Thirdly, and all these are connected, she was a woman of faith. You can't have a relationship if you don't have faith, and you can't pray without faith. And you know what increases faith? A relationship with the Lord and talking to Him. That strengthens our faith. So here she is. She's one of the things she's suffering from is from what she did not have. The Lord had shut up her womb. She wanted children. She didn't have any. That was one of the things that was causing her such a burden. So there was something she did not have. So what did she do? She laid hold of what she did have, which was the Lord. Which was the Lord. So many times we forget what we have. We forget what we have. She poured out her soul unto the Lord, and she believed that God was able to take care of it all. We read in verse 9 that she had gone into the tabernacle. And when she did so, she was in bitterness of soul and wept sore. We see that in verse 10. But in verse 18, she receives the promise of God through Eli. And she said, "Let thine handmaid find grace in thy sight," talking to Eli. So the woman went her way and did eat, and her countenance was no more sad. Why? Because she believed. She believed that God was going to take care of it. And her countenance was no more sad. So basically what you see in verse 18, she walks out of the tabernacle and she's saying, "I feel good. I feel good." She went in bitterness of soul, but she came out feeling good because she has faith. She has faith in the promise of God. And I believe that day Hannah went home relieved of a burden. I believe she went home that day filled with hope. I believe she went home that day greatly strengthened. She went home that day encouraged. She went home that day with joy. And though her request was not yet granted, her countenance was no longer sad. And though her request was not yet granted, she had victory. And where did she get the victory? Through faith. Through a relationship and talking to the Lord. Fourthly, she was a woman of praise. Again in verse 5 and verse 6, it is twice stated at the end of both of those verses, but the Lord had shut up her womb. That is twice stated. But then notice verse 19. She's left the tabernacle. And they rose up in the morning early and worshiped before the Lord and returned and came to their house, to Ramah. And Elkanah knew Hannah his wife. And the Lord remembered her. Not that he had forgotten. It means he blessed her. And the Lord remembered her. Wherefore, it came to pass, when the time was come, about after Hannah had conceived, that she bare a son, and called his name Samuel, saying, "Because I have asked him of the Lord." She conceived, were then told that she had a son, and called his name Samuel. And then the reason is stated why she called his name Samuel. Because I have asked him of the Lord. The name Samuel means heard of God. God heard. So what is when she named him Samuel, what she was doing was recognizing God's hand. And she's praising God. She's giving God all the credit for the birth of this child. In naming in verse 26 and verse 27. And she said, O my Lord, as thy soul liveth, my Lord, I am the woman that stood by thee here praying unto the Lord. For this child I prayed. Who's she giving the credit to? The Lord. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me my petition, which I asked of him. She was a woman of praise. Again, these all go together. You have a relationship with God, you will pray. And you will pray, and you will have joy, and you will sing praise, and you will give the credit to the Lord. They all go together. Notice in chapter 2, verse 1 through 3, she made it known that it was all of God. And Hannah prayed and said, My heart rejoiceth in the Lord, mine horn is exalted in the Lord, my mouth is enlarged over mine enemies, because I rejoice in thy salvation. Notice, in the Lord, thy salvation, there is none holy as the Lord, for there is none beside thee, neither is there any rock like our God. Talk no more exceeding proudly, let not arrogancy come out of your mouth, for the Lord is a God of knowledge, and by him actions are weighed. She's giving God all the glory. We need to do that. We need to give him all the glory. But before you can do that, you have to recognize God's hand. And she recognized God's hand in conception. She recognized God's hand in birth, and she gave him the glory. Fifthly, she was a woman of love and commitment. After her request was graciously granted by God, she did not forget the commitment that she had made back in verse 11. The commitment that she had made to God was, Lord, if you give me a child, I will give him unto you for his entire life. She took her relationship with the Lord seriously. And she kept her commitment. In verse 22, it says, I will bring him that he may appear before the Lord and there abide forever. In spite of the times in which she lived, she was committed to God. It's not the times in which we live. That's not the reason people aren't committed. It's not adverse circumstances either. We see all through the Bible examples of men and women who were faithful to God, who were committed to God, in spite of the times in which they lived, in spite of their adverse personal circumstances. Hannah is one of those examples. We see, sixthly, that she was a woman of willing sacrifice. Notice verse 27. For this child I prayed, and the Lord hath given me the petition which I asked of him. Therefore also I have lent him to the Lord. As long as he liveth, he shall be lent to the Lord. She gave him to God. She was willing. She prayed and prayed and prayed that God would give her a child. And when God did so, she was willing to let go. God blesses us every day. And we must be willing to let go. Give it all back to the Lord. And that's what she did here. She gave him to the Lord. She loved God first and foremost, and therefore she was willing to give her son to the Lord. And because she loved the Lord, she was willing to surrender that which was most precious, most dear unto her. Because she loved her son, she was willing to give him unto the Lord. Best thing you can do for your children is give them unto God. It's the best thing you can do for yourself. It's the best thing you can do for them. Just give them unto God. But in order to do that, you have to let go. And she did that. And the reason she did that is because she believed that God was worthy of all. Even worthy, more worthy than she was, of this, her son. And therefore she surrendered him to God. Seventhly and lastly, she was a woman of worship. She was a woman of worship. To worship God is to bow down in homage to Him. It is to reverence Him. It is to exalt Him. It is to love Him. It is to thank Him. It is to draw near to Him. It is to surrender to Him. She worshiped God when she came to the tabernacle to pour out her soul to God. She was worshiping the Lord. All prayer is a form. All true prayer is a form of worship. If you don't worship God in praying, you're not praying. She worshiped God when she went into the tabernacle. She worshiped God after the conception of Samuel. She worshiped God after the birth of Samuel. Why? Because she recognized that both of these things were of God. Oh, how we need to recognize God in everything. She worshiped God when she was caring for her child Samuel. She worshiped the Lord. While she was caring for him, she worshiped God. When she came to the tabernacle, again, it says after Samuel was weaned, which was 2 to 3 years later, we see that she comes and she surrenders him to God. And in doing so, she worshiped the Lord. What a woman is this Hannah. What an example that she sets for us. In Hannah is a message of hope. She went from emptiness to she bare a son. And we see the process of going from emptiness to fullness. She's a message of God's blessing. Notice in closing in 1 Samuel 2 in verse 21. And the Lord visited Hannah so that she conceived. What a wonderful statement. And the Lord visited Hannah. How wonderful it is when God visits. And the Lord visited Hannah, so, as a result of, she conceived and bare 3 sons and 2 daughters. And remember Samuel, the one she gave to God, and the child Samuel grew before the Lord. He was in the presence of God. He would be greatly used of God. So in Hannah, we see one going from emptiness to fullness, and it is God that gets all the glory. You and I should have no issue. I mean, we've got serious heart problems if we have an issue with giving God all the glory. He is to get all the credit. He is to get all the glory. We should not have an issue with that. It should not offend us one iota. If we don't get the glory and God does, that shouldn't bother you in the least. In fact, that ought to be a good reason to fall down and worship the Lord and thank Him. So God help us to have the characteristics of Hannah. Even though she lived in difficult and trying times, and even though she had personal trials, she was a woman who was an example of God's grace. In fact, her name means graciousness. She showed forth, she manifested the grace of the Lord. And that's what our lives ought to be all about. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us verse song.